Former Leafs general manager, NHL executive, Stanley Cup playoffs analyst on Sportsnet. Great to have him with us. It's Brian Burke. Good morning.
Morning, guys.
So, you part ways with the Calgary Flames, and now you are indeed your latest title, Stanley Cup playoffs analyst at Sportsnet. Does the day ever come where this is something that you want to do more than what you left?
Yep. It already has.
So, I mean, this is like you're doing this going forward, and an NHL team calls you tomorrow and says, we'd like you to be whatever. Are you not going?
Probably not. I wouldn't rule anything out completely, but probably not. No, I want to spend more time around my daughter. So hopefully I'm decent enough at this that someone wants to keep me around.
It's going well so far for us. This Brian Burke's our guest, of course, a Stanley Cup champion as well. I'll tell you what, if hockey ever goes back to Hartford, I know you'd like to see that. Would you like to see a team back in Hartford? Do you ever think that'll happen? We didn't think Winnipeg would happen 10 years ago, and there they are.
You'll see Jesus before you see a team in Hartford.
Okay. So both.
And what happened by the time I got there? So I went there in 92-93. That was my shortest stop of five short stops as a general manager. And back then, even by the time I got there, they called it the Roaring 80s in Hartford. Pratt & Whitney was the big jet aircraft manufacturer in West Hartford, and all the insurance companies were still based in and around Hartford. And most of the insurance companies had already begun their migration down to Manhattan. And all those jobs, thousands and thousands of excellent, well-paying jobs, had migrated out. Pratt & Whitney went from 10,000 big, good union jobs to 1,000. And you could see the corrosive effect on the economy even by the time I got there. Like, I could go out of my office on a summer night at 5:30, 5:45, and downtown Hartford was deserted. You could just set off a Claymore mine and not hurt a soul. So I don't think you can put a team back in there. I know Howard Baldwin has tried. I know that the governor's talked about it. I just don't see how it works. You go to an American League game now in Hartford, and there's maybe 800 people there some nights.
Yeah, it's tough. My sister went to UConn and played field hockey there. We went there, visited her in 94. She's a little bit younger than me. And then I went back maybe three or four years ago. And you're right. You could tell the even though Storrs kind of thrives, but that's a college town. That's Ann Arbor. You're not putting an NHL team in Ann Arbor. It doesn't work. Let me ask you about the longevity of coaching. We might see a bit of a carousel here, and you've had to make real hard decisions before about coaches. How much has it changed the longevity, the idea of a different voice? And I know you've talked about the media before. The media, does it do it? The immediacy to win? Why isn't there the length of coaching careers and coaching stops that there used to be?
Well, first off, the math has changed with expansion, okay? So I remember when there were 21 teams and 16 made the playoffs, and that was the math when I first got in this business. You just had to make a couple little trades, and you could get back in. Now there's 31 teams, soon to be 32 teams. So it's very possible, and you see it now more and more, for a team to miss the playoffs 5 or 6 or 7 years in a row before they get competitive and get back in and have a chance to stay there for a few years. You are due right now to win a Stanley Cup every 31 years. So if you're a season ticket holder in Toronto, which I am, I can expect in the next 31 years, mathematically, to see one Stanley Cup. So expansion has made the math very daunting and very difficult. And you look at the difference in the CFL where they've got single-digit teams. If a player plays 10 years in the CFL, he's probably got at least one ring because the math works. So number one, the math is awful, and you'll see pressure. My prediction based on the mathematics is you'll see pressure to increase the number of playoff teams because of that math. So that's one. Two is way more media scrutiny, but I don't blame the media for the coaching changes. They accelerate things, but they can't get a coach fired if he's winning. They can only accelerate it when things are going south, and they can and do accelerate it. But I think it's ownership groups that have come in recent years, I think, have less patience than traditional ownership groups had. I think there's a sense that, a new face can change things, and I just don't think as an industry, and we just went through a coaching change, so you can throw a rock right back at me. I don't think we're patient enough with our front office people or our coaches.
With Brian Burke, I wanted to ask you a question. I mean, we may or may not have a divide between the coach and the best player on the team here in Toronto. And I don't think Nick Kiprios is telling us that if he doesn't know something. So I would believe that there is at least something there. So you may have a young general manager coming in right now. You have a veteran president who played in the league. Does anybody step in if there's a problem there, or do the coach and the player need to work this out?
Well, I don't question Nicky, because Nicky's information is so good. I think with Mike, and I consider Mike a friend. I think Mike's a good guy and a good coach. I think with Mike has temporary rifts with lots of players because he's demanding. And that's what hard coaches do. So I don't think a guy goes a month playing for Mike without having a day where he's not sour at him. And these are all things that can be resolved. So I don't think I don't think Nick's wrong, but I don't think this means, okay, oh, good God, we got to have to move a player or fire a coach. Mike's hard on players, and he's going to have today there's going to be 8 players mad at him if they were still playing. And tomorrow will be 4 different ones. So, you know, I played for Lou Amarillo at Providence College 4 years. He was a hard coach. There's plenty of days where I walk out of the rink, curse at him, you know, just saying, this guy might be the biggest jerk I ever met. And 3 days later, everything was fine. So I don't think it's a huge problem. I don't think Nicky's wrong, but, I mean, this is how it works. I'm not sure how millennials work sometimes anyway. I really don't. I think they get our players now. We used to bark at each other on the bench, and I think players now are reluctant to do that so they don't hurt anyone's feelings.
I heard a stat yesterday that a millennial is actually somebody born 1982 and after. I find that hard to believe. We blame them for everything. So I find it hard to believe that a 36-year, like Patrick Marleau, is almost a millennial. I don't quite buy into that. He doesn't feel like a millennial to me.
I don't know what the definition is, but Patrick Marleau, he ain't a millennial. Pardon the poor grammar.
Well, you had that interesting call in the summer of 05, almost like a Sophie's Choice. And maybe it's like how a trade, you've probably made them before, and you go, hey, this will work out for both teams, maybe one short-term, long-term, where Mike Babcock ceased to be the coach of the Ducks. The Red Wings replaced Dave Lewis with him. You hire Randy. You both win cups within the next couple of years. What went into that summer and that decision, Brian?
Well, when I took the job, Mike was the coach, and Mike wanted a contract extension, which I thought was pretty reasonable. And we started talking, and we were talking about hunting, believe it or not. I'm a bird guy. Mike's more of a big game guy. But we had a great talk, but it was clear to me. I knew that he and Kenny Holland were close. I knew that Detroit had spoken to him, even though they weren't supposed to. And I said, Mike, you know what? I'm committed to a certain style of play. Like, my teams play much cruder hockey than most GMs. My teams are very physical. It's a real important part of our DNA. And I said, that's not your vision. So why don't you see what's out there, and I'll bring in the coach I want. So he was able to make his deal with Detroit and won a cup there. Good for Mike. Good guy, good coach. But I brought in Randy Carlisle. We played Brian Burke hockey, and we won a cup in Anaheim. So it worked out. It wasn't a Sophie's choice where it was this agonizing choice. It was more, after we talked it out, we realized one guy's on one side of the fault line and I'm on the other side. I was committed to a certain way, and it worked out well for both of us. We both have the same number of Stanley Cup rings, and Mike's got a really good job here, and he's done a really good job here.
We got a little over a minute here. I wonder, I mean, Vancouver and Anaheim and Toronto and Calgary and, you know, with Hartford, is there any team that you carry in your heart that you would like to see them do well that you have been with previously? More than any other?
Well, what happens is when you work for a team, first off, as long as you've got players there, you know, everyone thinks you must hate the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, no, I still got players there. So when they play, you're watching Jake, and you're watching Morgan Riley, you're watching Nazem Kadri, you're watching Connor, on and on. I think there's 6-7 guys left still. So you're watching them and hoping for the best. And guys you've had that have gone elsewhere, Phil Kessel, et cetera. So, no, there's not any one particular team, but you do cheer for guys. You want your former players to have success.
The Kadri maturation, were you ever worried that it wouldn't connect? I know Dallas Aikens, we spoke to on the show. I think he made his comments on this show about Naz's diet at the time and the the lack of vegetables. Did you ever worry? Because I'm sure you can think of 20 players, Brian, that so talented, top 10 draft pick, and it just never clicked. They never got that. I was talking about self-awareness earlier. Are you proud of him, and did you ever worry it wouldn't get to this point?
Yes, I'm proud of him, and yes, I lost a lot of sleep, and I got a lot of gray hair because of Nazem Kadri, but yes, I'm proud of him. And what's distinguished him from those other guys is he always had that edge. Even when he was going through his immature period, he still was playing with an edge, and you could see he figured it out. He had to make some choices about people he hung around with and things he ate and stuff. He's done a good job.